Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. The photo on the screen in front of you on the left is a photo taken of Kevin Strom in 1991 at their new studio, and he's been running the Liberty Net show for decades. I think the original Liberty Net show was started in the 1970s. So it shows that these whites have been talking for a long, long time. And that's excellent. That is the only thing that's important. It's the most important thing of all, is that whites need to talk to other whites. But anyway, that is a young Kevin Alfred Strom doing his thing at the new studio back in 1991. And on the right is a painting that isn't quite a photograph. It looks like it's something that's been painted or done digitally based on a photograph of the late great Dr. William Pierce. And Pierce actually was convinced that Kevin Strom would be the best guy to lead his organization. That's as best as I understand. But anyway, what you're about to hear is me appearing for the second time on Liberty Net. The previous time was actually almost 2 years ago, and I had been dawdling in this regard. I need to appear more often on their show, actually. But there was something that went very wrong here. I was actually very sick and I wasn't feeling well at all. And even though I had rested for several hours the day before and even prior to the show, the fact is that I didn't realize that I wasn't going to make it. And after I'd been on the show for about 2 hours, I suddenly began to feel faint and I wanted to pass out. And all I was able to do was to quickly type a message to Kevin, and that was all I could do. And then I had to just try to get to my bed, to fall into the bed, because I was just totally buggered. I was gonna faint where I was sitting. So that was my rude exiting from this particular show, but I will make up for it and I will be back sooner. I will not wait for another 2 years or even another year. I'll see to it that I'm back this year. On this show, we talk about many different things. This show was done on the 5th of May, and this was just a couple of days after the whole incident of my visa being revoked. I was absolutely shattered from all the efforts and the work that I'd been doing leading up to the 30th of April when I was going to get on the plane. And it actually took me about 2 to 3 weeks to really recover. It actually took more like 3 weeks for me to recover from absolute exhaustion of all the things that I'd been doing. So anyway, here is the show.
WB4AIO from KA2PTE.
KA2PTE and the great Liberty Net Pre-Net. Here's WB4AIO, Kevin in Western Pennsylvania. And on the line, I have two excellent people on our Liberty Net phone patch. I have Natalie and Jan. Natalie in Ontario, go ahead and say hi to the net.
Good evening, Kevin. Good evening, Steve. Hi, Jan. Also, I'd like to say a shout out to the absolute love of my life in South Africa, and his name is Johan. He's supposed to be tuning in this evening. And any of the other friends that I have referred and asked to tune in this evening, welcome to them too. And welcome to everybody in the chat room and anybody else who may be tuned in.
Very good, Natalie. We look forward to your contributions. And hello, Jan. It's great to have you back on the Liberty Net again.
Hi there, Kevin. It's awesome to be back on this on your Liberty Net again. I'm really grateful for a chance to speak to all of you and looking forward to the chat tonight.
We are very grateful that you are here too. And everybody should know that Jan is up at 4 a.m. South African time to be on the Liberty Net. So that is amazing. And we're very glad he's here. He is, you are the author of several different websites. Would you quickly like to tell the listeners and the participants what those websites are before we get onto the main part of the net?
Yes, my main website is historyreviewed.com. And then I also have another one called africancrisis.info. But historyreviewed.com focuses on all the big picture stuff, Jews, Hitler, World War II, and anything racial. And African Crisis focuses on things specific to the whites of Southern Africa.
Thank you so much. Excellent websites. Everyone should be reading them. And let's get it back to the net. We are all well here in the Strom household, Steve, and we hope Mike is there too. And let's get the net rolling. We're going to have a lot of things brought up tonight, I am very sure, and it's going to be great listening. Back over to you, KA2PTE and the Great Liberty Net Pre-Net. This is WB4AIO in Pennsylvania.
All right, Kevin, sounds good. WB4AIO from KA2PTE on the pre-net for our Liberty Net current events discussion for Saturday, May 4, 2024. Good evening to Natalie and good evening to Mr. Lamprecht coming to us live from South Africa. And yeah, 4 a.m., that is an early bird gets the worm situation for sure. So it should be a very interesting net having him here tonight with us like it was last time he was here. We've certainly missed him. A lot of the things that he contributed and put out there have stuck with me very, very strongly since then. And I'm really glad he's there with us today. And we had kind of a, I don't know, sort of a partly sunny day. It seems like it's warming up over here in southern Vermont and the New England area. And I think we're supposed to have some rain tomorrow is in the forecast sometime. So we're getting ready for that. And hopefully not too much flooding as last time, but our ground is still kind of wet from a lot of the previous rain and flooding that we've had. So you just never know with these, the way the weather is now, it's very unstable, and you got to pretty much be ready for anything. So with that, I guess I'll pass it over to Mike and RBI over on the Haney Ranch in Collins, Ohio, and we'll see how he's doing here on our pre-net. Over to you, Mike and RBI from KA2PTE.
Hello, radio once again. Good evening, everybody. KA2PTE with WB4IO. And hello, Natalie. How you doing? And Han, or is it Jan? I probably already blew it for tonight on the Great Liberty Net. But welcome back to the net, though. Can't wait to hear what you may have to say for what's going on in that part of the world. As far as things around here today, I went out to Berea, Ohio today to do some more video filming out there. Met up with a gentleman calls himself CSX Ohio Rail Fan Plus. So great guy, though. Did a joint video kind of, though, today with him. Other things, got a call before I headed back here to the house here from my mother, though. Said something about the front tire on the lawnmower, on the lawn tractor came off the rim, I guess. So I went over there and played around a little bit. I got it mounted back up and pressured up, though. So it's amazing. These lawn tractor rims, they are really garbage. So it's not anything like a car rim. They just, If the pressure gets low, though, the entire bead and seal will pop right off, which a car rim won't do that. So totally big difference, though. But I guess they do that so in easiness to get the tire off to put another one on. But next time I go over there, I'm going to demount that tire and put some sealer in there so it don't leak out again. So is eventually it will leak out over time. So other than that, not a whole lot. I'm going to have David Coleman on here, probably the first round, though. We got lots to talk about. We have derailments and things on the Brightline passenger transit system, though, too, coming up. And he'll fill me in more detail. I'm limited a little bit on that, a little bit. Currently, right now, it's a pleasant 66 degrees, and we don't have any rain, though, but we do have rain in the forecast coming for the course of the day tomorrow, so don't look like I'm going to be outside getting anything done tomorrow, so anyway, that's about it. Oh, Big Daddy Cork will be on, too. We got some interesting things in Clipso. He'd be wanting me to run, though, so we'll be standing by for him on probably round two. So anyway, with that, though, I shall turn and salute the flag, and we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. With that, I will turn it back over to Net Control. KA2PTE with WB4IO, Natalie and Han or Jan. I'm sure I'll get the name right, though, when I hear it again. I remember you being on some time ago. Anyway, back over to Net Control. This is N8RBI.
All right, Mike, thank you. N8RBI from KA2PTE on the end of the Freenet for our LibertyNet current events discussion. And thank you, Mike, for reading the Pledge of Allegiance. And I guess we'll get started with our LibertyNet tonight. You're listening to the LibertyNet. It's the longest running current events discussion on amateur radio. It started in 1974, and we're going to be celebrating 50 years this year of the LibertyNet very soon, just around the corner. So congratulations to everybody out there that's been a listener or has contributed to the LibertyNet here with us. We're really looking good now and getting more popular than ever, obviously. And it's really great honor to be here and be the Net Control station for the last few years. And basically, we use this net to report on current events, and we also exercise our free speech while we're doing this. And we conduct the net in a manner on ham radio known as the dedicated net format, and that means each person that checks in gets to go once per round. And then at the end, we have what we call a 73 round, which in ham radio means goodbye. And we basically have been running about sort of like 3 hours lately. We probably will be running around that length tonight, I guess, with our guests. And we basically do the three rounds, and then we look for check-ins using our CQ100 platform, which is over on www.qsonet.com. And that's the platform for amateur radios all around the world to use to get in and network with other ham radio operators. The net is also streamed live on www.3950.net by Kevin, WB4AIO, over in the Allegheny Mountains of Pennsylvania. And he's the first check-in here on our LibertyNet, and he also runs a phone patch over there, as well as a Zoom patch that anybody can either call into or use the Zoom platform to be with us on the net. And if you're listening and you want to join us, you can call the patch, which is phone number 814-479-0101, or you could use the Zoom platform. If you've got that installed, and you can look for the meeting ID number 814-479-0101. It's the same number. It's a little easier that way. And he's already got two guests on the patch, like he announced in the pre-net. He's got Nat from Canada, who reports in on news from South Africa and Canada for us for the past couple of years. And he's also got a special guest, Jan Lamprecht from South Africa. He's live, going to be with us, and we're very honored to have him here again with us. He's a returning guest on our LibertyNet, and we've got Mike N8RBI as the tail gunner checked in from Collins, Ohio, who I think it's today is the train night, I believe. I think he may have a report for us about the trains, if I remember right. So should be an interesting net. And I guess before I finish up the introductions, I'm going to pause because we may have a check-in or two possible on the CQ100 portion of the net, of the CQ100 platform that we're using. And I will give an opportunity for any ham out there that's listening to check in or do a one and done or just let us know that they're out there. So if you're out there on CQ100 and you want to check in or say hi, I'll leave a space here before I continue.
VE3NU in Toronto, and I wonder if it's permissible just to listen tonight. I'm just not feeling right up to snuff. I've been feeling really, really ill for the last couple of weeks, so I wasn't able to get on, but I'm going to listen for as much as I can. But I do have a question for you. If you know, I'm sure you do, is that a 5894? I ran one on 10-meter phone for a long time. I remember the B-plus going to it. Wow, that was crazy. That looks like a 5894. I got a brand new one here if you want it. All right, so if that's okay with you, I'll just listen. VE3NU, and my name is Paul.
Okay, copy that, Paul, VE3NU. That's Paul over in Toronto, Canada. Good evening to you, and welcome to the Liberty Net. And I heard you just want to listen. That's fine, no problem. I hope you find tonight's net interesting. Usually you seem to find it interesting and enjoyable, and sorry to hear you're not feeling well. But I don't know, maybe after the net you might feel a little better if you can hang in there and last the duration. We've got some good people coming in here and always contributing something. It seems like it's getting a bit longer in length, and more contribution means a more interesting net. And I don't know if that tube, I guess, is what you're talking to about, the one I put in the image sharing up on the screen there on our CQ100 platform. Maybe Kevin, I don't know if he sees it, but it is a GE tube, but I'm not really familiar with the number on it. I'll have to look into that and get back to you, unless Kevin knows, but I'm not sure if he can see the screen, or if maybe Mike can see the screen. Maybe he knows what tube that is. But thanks for letting us know you're out there, Paul. And to continue, I guess, with the introductions, I mentioned we do have a site, www.3950.net, and Kevin WB4AIO maintains that site, and there is a ton of information about the LibertyNet there dating back many years. There are lots of previous recordings back when we used to do the net on ham radio. He would record a lot of LibertyNets, and we had a lot of participation from ham stations over here in the U.S., and Kevin's been following the Liberty Net for a long, long time. I think he had told us once that he originally found out about it in a newspaper called The Spotlight, and according to what I researched a little bit further with that, I guess there was a lobby that was in D.C. that newspaper was representing, and it was sort of a conservative kind of a lobby that had a lot of interesting people in it, and I guess the Liberty Net was sort of a spinoff of those people, and I guess in the ham radio community, and that's sort of like a little bit of history, I guess, of how Liberty Net got started. But I think Kevin might understand and know a little bit more about it accurately than I do. And we do have a live stream going right now on 3950.net, and that can be listened to with the live play button. And that stream also goes over to a website called MyTuner. It's mytuner-radio.com. And the live stream can be listened to there. And that also has an app you can download for your mobile device where you could, I guess, kind of bookmark the LibertyNet as a content that you can just bring up on your mobile device every Saturday, and you can kind of listen that way. So a couple of different ways to listen live. Welcome to anyone listening to us either on the website or on that platform. And back over on the 3950.net site, we do have a link that you could join for our email list on the Groups.io platform. There's usually a lot of activity in there now since we've got our number one Marine joining us on our LibertyNet pretty regular. That would be Cork over in Pennsylvania near Kevin's QTH in his neck of the woods. And he is finding an enormous amount of interesting material. Some of it's directly related to what we talk about here. And then in between the serious reporting, he's also got some pretty funny things that he does. And that's great that we have a Marine that can, a Marine vet that can do that. And he may be calling in on Mike's patch, and we might hear from him later on at some point, probably. So we've got that email list, and we've also got a chat room that's running there that people can get into. You don't have to be a ham radio station to use the email list or the chat room. You can get in there and hang out. I think Kevin might be logged into the chat room. Sometimes he lets us know who's in there and what's going on. And I guess welcome to everybody that's hanging out in the chat room there. And welcome aboard our LibertyNet tonight, our LibertyNet ship. We're going to set sail, I guess, with the first round right now, and I'm kind of going to look at a subject, I guess, that's kind of related with our guest here, Jan Lamprecht. And I had been on Jan's site many times trying to find something interesting to read, and it's not really, I guess, difficult for me to do that. There's plenty of stuff. His website is historyreviewed.best. I think there's a couple of different URLs he has, but the one that sticks with me is historyreviewed.best, and it's all one word with the .best as the top-level domain. And I was just kind of looking around to try to find this article, but then I had to go back to our email list here to try to find out what exactly the name of the person was that I was thinking of. And it was this, I don't know what you'd call the I don't know what you'd call the exact definition of it, but let me see if I can really quick locate it again. I should have really bookmarked it, but let's see if it comes up. Let's see. Yeah, I guess I don't remember the name of the person, but maybe Jan will probably recognize it. It's basically a white person that was, this is just off the top of my head from memory. I can't find the exact link in the email. But I found it interesting because it escaped my radar, and I think Cork, our marine vet, even commented on it to reply back. But it is a, I guess, white nationalist, I would guess, in, I think it was Oslo, which is Norway, I believe. And this is years old, and basically, I guess he went on a killing spree up there, and I think Jan was commenting on how that was the most kills that a white has done. It sort of set a record, and I was kind of looking at it and trying to learn more about what happened, but I know that the video I saw about, I guess, his initial trial, he was saying that basically he did what he did because he believes the justice system there in his country is basically overran and under the control, I believe, of the New World Order, the we call it here in the America the swamp creatures, and I guess you could say that's the international globalists terrorist cult. I think E. Michael Jones, who does a great show on his website and podcast, he calls them smug elites, but I call them smug, corrupt, criminally insane, smug elites. I kind of expand on that a little bit and make it a little bit more digestible. But I guess that's sort of what his point of the whole, I guess, killing spree was. And I don't know the details about the victims, but I would imagine that they were probably corrupt, I don't know what you'd say, Zionists, shills, or just these, like I guess what we see here in America is how we don't really have a choice. We have the swamp, which is the Democrats, and then we have our Republicans, which are supposed to uphold the Constitution and remind us that this nation is a law of constitutionalists that are based on the founding principles of our founding fathers, and we have all of these constitutional rights. One of them is the right to free speech, which is what we exercise every night on our Liberty Net. First of all, exercising that constitutional muscle is very important. We've said that plenty of times, and I'm guessing, you know, that was probably the point of this attack. But I think too, his point was that we better start doing something now before it's too late. I'm pretty sure that was the whole point of it, was kind of just to bring this into a escalated kind of perspective using the example of violence. And I guess he made the Heil sign, the Hitler salute, and I found it very interesting. I meant to follow up and kind of look into this a little further. I only I think I posted a video to the email list and I didn't really get a chance to look into it any further, but now that we have our guest, Jan, maybe, who knows, he'll elaborate on that a little bit more, and we'll get a better idea of what his thoughts were on that. So that's kind of about it out of me for the first round here, and to kick us off and put us in the right direction. So what I'll do is I'll pass it over to Kevin, WB4AIO, who's got Natalie and Jan on there as our guests, and I'll let him take it away. So over to you, Kevin, WB4AIO from KA2PTE.
Okay, very good, Steve. Very good, Mike. Hi. This is WB4AIO on the Liberty Net, and yes, it is our 50th year. We're very proud of that, and we're even planning on having a get-together in Butler, Pennsylvania on the 9th of June, so stay tuned for more details about that. But let us quickly get it to our Ontario correspondent, Natalie. It is your turn.
Thank you, Kevin. And by the way, Mike, hi. I'm sorry I forgot about you in the beginning. So special hello to you. Anyway, this story made me think a lot about our very own gentleman rehab in the Marines, except for this was a sniper in the Canadian Army. Selfless act of heroism, the Canadian sniper who used his body as a shield to save a wounded soldier. Master Corporal Jeremy Pynchon, a sniper with the Royal Canadian Regiment from Pembroke, Ontario, was deployed with his small detachment of marksmen to an isolated rooftop west of Kandahar in southern Afghanistan. They were watching over a joint patrol of Canadian Afghan soldiers protecting their southern flank as they advanced towards a base of Taliban operations. The war was grinding on. In just a few weeks, the number of Canadian soldiers killed in Afghanistan would pass 100. It had been 7 years since the Taliban was driven out of the capital, Kabul, and south towards Kandahar. But they had retrenched into a guerrilla force constantly on the move and in hiding, planting bombs in the roads and ambushing the NATO forces trying to root them. Suicide bombs were a constant risk in urban areas. Outside the cities, the counterinsurgency was struggling. Much effort and mentorship was being directed at boosting the security capacity of Afghan police and soldiers, but first peace had to be made by fighting. Zawahiri District, west of Canada, was the center of the operations to diminish the Taliban's military strength, destroy their weapons, and support the citizenry in rejecting them. Within its uneven terrain of vineyards with mud-walled agricultural compounds offering makeshift shelter for guerrilla fighters, it was the setting for brutal combat throughout 2008. But there was progress. 2 years previously, during the Canadian-led Operation Medusa, the stretch of road linking a handful of villages near Kandahar was among the deadliest in all of Afghanistan. A Canadian soldier died on the road after stepping on an improvised explosive device, but now it was being paved by 100 of local workers in conjunction with an irrigation project and a new police station. The attack sprang up on Pynchon and his detachment in Zawahiri District in November 2008. It was an immediate catastrophe. Well organized, well armed, the Taliban fighters outnumbered the patrol. Pynchon's citation for the Star of Military Valor, Canada's second highest military award for bravery, says that when a fellow soldier was wounded so badly it threatened his life, Pynchon administered first aid and then deliberately shielded him from Taliban fire with his own body. His own protective armor was struck several times and kept both of them from being killed. Master Corporal Pynchon's selfless act of heroism saved the life of a fellow soldier, the citation reads. So I thought that was a pretty good story to tell, considering that, you know, we hear of Cork and how well he does.
Yes, well, I think that when I think of that conflict, I think of so many good, brave white men who died. And it was an unworthy cause. They were sacrificed for a terrible, terrible cause that we shouldn't have had sent our men to die in. It was a horrible mistake. But great men, great heroes, great bravery. Mm-hmm. And I hope that someday men like that, their sons and grandsons of these men, can be fighting for our own race's survival, because we desperately need to fight that battle, not these battles. Yes. For Israel or for U.S. hegemony. Terrible, yes. Terrible, unworthy causes. But yes, thank you for that story. And
unfortunately, we're sending all this money to these different countries, and where are our veterans, these people that, like this Canadian sniper, where's he going to be in 20 years' time? On the street while we're bringing in non-whites?
He'll have a pension that's worth about 25 cents a week, I'm guessing, the way the value mm-hmm. of our money is going.
Exactly. Mm.
Very good. Thank you for the story, and let's get it over to Jan in South Africa. Welcome back to the Liberty Net, Jan. We're glad you're here, and what has been going on with you, and what do you want to relay to the net?
There's so much to talk about, but for the other gentleman who didn't know how to pronounce my name, you can either pronounce it as Jan, that would be the way an American would normally pronounce it, or if you want to do it more closely to the Afrikaans, just change it to a Y and just say Jan. That's fine. either one is perfect. But the big thing I want to talk about that happened to me this week is I had an arrangement to fly to the United States, and I was going to fly to the USA and stay there and meet some people for about a month. And my ticket was a two-stage ticket because there aren't that many flights from South Africa to America. So my first stage was from Johannesburg, where I live, all the way down to the south to Cape Town. And then I was going to wait in Cape Town for a couple of hours before I get onto the plane to go to America. And I flew down. I was sitting and waiting there at the airport. And the plane was supposed to fly at about 8 o'clock in the evening. And I checked to see, and it's via an American airline, and I checked to see what time do they open up for check-in, which would have been 5 o'clock. And then at 4 o'clock, suddenly I start getting phone calls. At first, the first phone call, I thought this is spam, because in South Africa, you get lots of marketing spam rubbish. So I just blocked the call and ignored it. And then the next thing was my travel agent phoned, and my travel agent said to me, listen, you need to go down to counter 31 at that airline. Go to counter 31. They need to speak to you. They're trying to contact you, and they're going to help you. That was their words, going to help you. So I walked down to the counter, and I think, well, it's 4 o'clock. You know, maybe they're even going to let me check in earlier. I get there and I say to the guy, I say, you know, I'm Jan Lamprecht, and I believe I need to see you people. And then he asked me for my passport, which also had my airline ticket. And the moment I gave it to him, he immediately gave it to another staff member of the airline. And they then took the ticket away, gave my passport to me, and then they said to me that the United States government had sent an email earlier in the day, and the email said that my visa had been revoked and that they are not allowed to put me on the plane to America. Well, I must tell you, I never saw that coming, I must tell you. So I said to them, you know, why was my visa revoked? You know, what did the email say? Can I see the email? And they couldn't show me anything. Anyway, so after a whole bunch of things, I eventually had to, and because it was a two-stage flight, my baggage was already getting ready to go onto the aircraft to the United States.
Oh, man.
So I had to go and get my baggage. And then I had to go and buy a ticket to fly back home at quite a costly price, I must tell you. and I must tell you that, you know, South Africa's quite a screwed up country. So when I flew back to Johannesburg, I get to Johannesburg almost midnight, and I want to get myself an Uber. But, you know, you guys won't believe how this country functions. You know, the blacks are busy fighting with each other over taxi routes and things like that. And so if you call for an Uber, then there's a black who says, a black would walk on the street. A black guy walks on the street. He says, oh, you're looking for Uber. I'll get you an Uber. But Uber doesn't function like that. You don't go and talk to someone on the street to get an Uber. You got to use an app, okay?
Sure.
So I said to him, I'm not interested, man. Go away, you know? And the next thing is, you won't believe how much I struggled to get a freaking Uber at midnight, because the Uber driver is too scared to come there because the other blacks attack them. Anyway, I was not a happy person. Oh, I got home after midnight, and I want to just read to you afterwards. Afterwards, I actually found that the U.S. consulate sent me an email, and I just want to read you the email because it stunned me. It said, "Hello, Mr. Lamprecht. Please be advised that your U.S. visa has been revoked by the U.S. Department of State on or before the date of this notification. The visa has been revoked pursuant to Section 221I of the Immigration and Nationality Act. The revocation is effective immediately unless you are physically present in the United States at this time, in which case it will become effective immediately upon your departure. This action is based on the fact that subsequent to the visa issuance, information has come to light indicating that you may be ineligible for your visa. Kindly do note that you will not be able to travel on the current U.S. visa. If you would like to travel to the United States, you must reapply for a new visa. Please refer to the questions and answers for further details." And it's got three questions and answers. Only the first one's really relevant. It says, question, why was my visa revoked? Answer, information has become available subsequent to visa issuance that indicates you may no longer be eligible for your visa. And I'd got my visa just a couple of weeks before. In fact, I had to get a brand new passport and a visa at quite a cost. And suddenly, out of the blue, you know, this freaking thing. And you know, here are these American Airlines people saying to me, "We are not allowed to let you board this plane." And I'm like, "What the heck is this?" So this is quite a nice backstab, if you can call it that. And I have no idea what the cause of this is, but it sounds to me like there's a procedure whereby someone in the USA can write to the State Department and tell them something. And I don't know who it is, but sounds like it might be, some of my enemies at work. But the thing that really bothers me about this is, you know, will I be able to get another visa to the USA? What is going on? And we have already, the person who helped me to get my visa has already replied to them, but I'm going to reply again to them and ask them, you know, tell me exactly what the issue is, you know, and can it be fixed? Because if I can't go to the USA, then it means I also literally can't go to Canada, and we lose all the ticket money. But my big concern is whether this is going to be a permanent thing. Is this going to hound me? I'm going to do my utmost to comply with all the rules and to see if I can get this fixed. But I must say I am a little bit concerned about it. I am quite concerned about it, actually. And I'm not quite sure what the issue is, whether there's just one particular thing on my trip that's the issue, or whether there's something else going on. But it's all kind of mysterious, and I'd like to know what is the issue and can I solve it? And this is really bothering me. Regarding what Steve mentioned about the white wolf, I did some videos about guys that I called white wolves. These are white guys who've stood up and basically fought back racially. And the original white wolf in South Africa, I forget his name now, but there was an Afrikaans guy who in the 1980s ran around in Pretoria, white guy, and he shot a bunch of blacks. I think he shot about 8 blacks or so. And he's still around, but you can't speak to him because he's, you know, all these people go into hiding. I think he had spent some time in jail, and later on they managed to get him out when we handed over to the blacks. But I did some videos about guys like Dylan Roof and Anders Breivik. Now, there are people who dispute as to whether what Anders Breivik did was a good thing. My only interest in it was not so much the why he did it, but to show people, to say to people, you know, there is a lesson from these guys, is that it's quite interesting to see how effective they are in, let's call it, a combat situation. And all these guys are guys who've never been in the military. They've never been in the military. They've never done anything. And they did it all by themselves, though there are people who dispute a bunch of stuff to do with Anders Breivik. But I must say that the reasons that Anders Breivik actually gave, he seemed to be very focused on feminism. He was saying that feminism is taking over, you know, Norway, et cetera, et cetera. And, the guy that impresses me the most is actually Dylan Roof, because Dylan Roof, people don't know, people always focus on the fact that Dylan Roof shot a bunch of blacks. What nobody ever tells you is that Dylan Roof actually set out to assassinate a black guy who's a communist, who's in the state government. And Dylan Roof is unique. He's the only guy who carried out a successful assassination of a high-ranking government official. This was a state-level guy. And the other people that he killed were let's call it, they were just, there was just like collateral damage. But he actually carried out a successful assassination. And when I look at Dylan Roof with his little setup, I must tell you, I have a lot of respect for what Dylan Roof did. For a young guy who had no military experience, nothing whatsoever, he did his thing. But I don't advocate those kinds of things. I don't think terrorism and assassination is going to help us. I just used it as an example of what whites can do with their limited resources if they really set their minds to it. And to me, it showed that, you know what, white men will be more than capable of dealing with the situation anywhere in the world in the future. And that was the only purpose that I did those videos. But I do believe that the only way forward, especially for us in South Africa, the whole issue of assassination and terrorism, that's not going to work for us, not going to work for us. And people like the KKK, who were also doing things, etc., that kind of stuff isn't going to work for you. You need to tackle this from a high level with a political thing that you stand up for. And in our case in South Africa, secession is the only game in town. We need to look towards secession and a Afrikaner Volkstaat, a Boer state. And that's the only thing to work towards, and that's the thing to stand up for.
Yes, well, in Ireland, they had successful secession 100 years ago from the British Empire. They didn't do it with individuals with rifles, though. They did it with in-depth organization, from charities to churches, all the way to their own army. They had everything. They had it in depth, and that's really what is needed for a successful secession. And I think that's what's going to work someday.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. Interesting thoughts, radical thoughts, and let's see what kind of hand grenades you've set off into the discussion. Thank you. Let's go on to the Net Control Station, KA2PTE and the Great Liberty Net with N8RBI on the side. Here's WB4AIO.
All right, Kevin, very good. WB4AIO from KA2PTE in the middle of round one of our LibertyNet current events discussion, and good article reporting there with the Marines by Nat, and the stuff Jan mentioned is interesting, where the visa was canceled, and it's amazing that I think that is going to be something that just happens a lot more often now, because we're in this age of the computer, and I mean, all it really takes is a Pakistani over there in the remote part of the world pressing a key that says, we don't like this guy or girl, or, we don't want them to do this, and it's just that easy now. Someone you never even met decides, this person isn't allowed to travel, or, this person isn't allowed to drive, or, we're in that world now where it's not a system where you have a hearing before actual people that get to decide what's going to be and what's not going to be, and, you have to spend time tracking down, this nonsense, and in my experience, it more or less winds up being there's a couple of words that come to mind. It's like, well, here they call it a shit show. That's one word I hear for it, because it's just a bunch of bullshit that never ends. You're asking a question, and then somebody else says, I don't know, it's not my department, this is so-and-so's department. They just pass that buck around back and forth, and I mean, eventually you get the idea that it's a dead end, and this is pretty much the system that they're putting out there, and they are, in the end, if you really hammer them, probably the response, like I'm getting recently, is, I don't make the rules, I just follow them. This is the sick mentality you got out there, these liberal communist Marxist lemmings that are at the phones, they're in the email responses, and it's kind of a dead end, so there isn't really too much I think can be done about these situations, but it seems to be a trend now where it's just this, another word somebody used was in the tech community, one of my tech communities, they called it enshittification. so it's out there, you'll get a website and you're using it fine, and then 1 minute, boom, it gets an update and it's nothing like it was. I mean, Gab is a good example of that. I think Jan is on Gab, and they recently decided, we're going to do away with these memes because, it's generating too much content for us. That's what Torba said was, after we stopped, people from putting memes up there without paying us for them, it's so quiet and peaceful in here, So in other words, you're running a site called Gab where you're supposed to encourage Gab communication, and you like it quiet. What the hell is wrong with you? It's just, you've got this serious mental disease out there. It's amazing how it just keeps going. But I do like what you said about Dylan Roof. Usually when I mention my, great things about him, I hear crickets chirping. Not many people out there like what I have to say about that. But, I think in your video or article there, you did mention that it was a high-level black, politician, and it's amazing, again, they kept that information out of the reporting. They just said it was an attack, a racist attack on, it was 8 blacks, and it will not be tolerated, he is going to be executed or whatever, but he did go into a church, and I really sympathize with him because he's a young person, Andres Breivik seems to be a young white man, and when you're that age, you're thinking of this, you're seeing, these Negroes are just out there wrecking all the stuff that my ancestors built. You know, I'm here. I enjoy, you know, these things that were left behind. I enjoy driving a car. I enjoy driving through a city and seeing all these great things, that infrastructure that's been left behind because of our forefathers, you know, building them, dying them, passing them on generation to generation. And now you see these subhuman pieces of garbage just coming in there saying, well, our Black Lives Matter, and it matters so much that we get to burn it down, loot it, destroy it, and rape people out in the open, and you don't like it, too bad, you're a racist. Well, you know, back in the old days, our fathers wouldn't tolerate any of that crap. They'd be in there, they'd be armed, and they'd be kicking some serious ass before even 1% of that happened is allowed to transpire. So I think it does fall on the young people. It hits them the hardest. And he did something, definitely did some damage to them. And I think the Norway situation is sort of possibly similar. But, you know, when it's left to the young people to decide what to do that don't have the experience or the guidance properly on what to do, you know, from the older people, they're kind of left on their own. What else are they supposed to do? It's either stand up, fight, or just lay down and die. And I think we're at the point now where a lot of us realize we better stand up and fight. Otherwise, you're just going to be laying there and taking it. And we do have a choice. We don't have to just stay there and take this. We can fight back, and we can get our countries back. And I like that entire aspect, like you pointed out, Jan, and great stuff out of you, and good commentary by Kevin there about the actual way to actually start getting things, you know, organized, and we definitely need to get more organized. That's probably the next thing that needs to be done pretty soon in the development of our recovery here against this communist globalist attempted takeover that we're all struggling with every day now. But with that, I'll pass it over to Mike, NARBI, and we'll hear what he's got for us over in his neck of the woods there in on the Haney Ranch. Over to you, Mike, NARBI from KA2PTE.
Okay, KA2PTE with WB4AIO, Natalie and Han. Okay, Jan or Han. Now, I have to write it down, but I think it's Jan. Anyway, great interesting stuff there, indeed, though. There's one thing I'm going to discuss real quick, though it's not real long, though, before I have David Coleman on here. This has to be in regards to Pennsylvania Senate Bill 37, titled Enhanced Driver Responsibility. It is currently under consideration, sparking concerns among the amateur radio community. If the bill is passed, could make it illegal for amateur radio operators to use their radios while driving, making significant changes from the previous legislation. While exemptions for radio operators were once included, the recent amendments would remove those exemptions, making it illegal for anybody to use any radio microphone or handy talkie whatsoever. So that means CB radio operators, truck drivers, look out, guys. If this passes, though, they're going to be targeting you, the main one here. So anyway, a little bit of info. It's on a YouTube post here that I found. I think it was on the 27th of April. I will post it in our mail, though, and if I can, I'll try to upload it to the 3950.net website. So, and by the way, Kevin, though, I tried uploading my solar eclipse video that one day, though, and it didn't seem like I want to take it. And it wasn't a very big file to upload, so there may be a glitch there or something preventing uploads. I don't know, but might want to check it out, though. Because I know at one time you set it for a max of 50 gigabytes or something, though, for a video, which kind of is an overkill because none of mine are ever that long. So anyway, you might want to check that out, Kevin, though. But I'll try to upload that tonight, though, in the proper format. So anyway, I got David Coleman here from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Good evening, Dave.
Hey, Mike, what's up, man? It's good to be back on with you and everybody here on the Liberty Net. Great to be back to talk some of the big topics here in the railroad world.
Okay, so, where do you want to start? I know we have some derailments, so where was that? BNSF one had one, though, then we had a CSX, so I don't know. Why don't you start it off, though, and refreshing this Bidenitis brain?
So, yeah, we've had a couple derailments over the last month or so. So back, April 15th, three were injured as CSX trains collided in Folkston, Georgia, which is just north of Jacksonville. So it's Folkston's the spot where the line to Waycross and the line to Savannah that come out of Jacksonville split off. And what ended up happening was, I guess the signals that they were doing like a signal testing or something like that. They had all these issues that they, you know, the signals weren't working. So the trains were operating under a EC1 form, which is something that the dispatcher issues to the trains. And they just, you know, obviously things were not operating properly. And then two trains collided. It was almost like this PTC, this positive train control we've talked about for years, was, you know, this new thing that they had invested so much money in, really was worthless for this thing. And luckily, from what I know, there none of the injuries were life-threatening, but very scary nonetheless when this derailment happened a few weeks ago.
Okay, was there any hazardous materials, though? I didn't see anything in that, though. It was, from what I've seen, though, in the videos and stuff, they didn't really mention anything about that. Was there anything hazardous or any threat, though, in that way that you know of?
Not that I know of. It sounded like one of the trains was an intermodal train and the other train was a rock train
from
a nearby quarry. So, so nothing hazardous. Just, you know, obviously it's a major route that goes into Florida. And, you know, trains that come out of there that go to the Northeast and the Midwest. So, obviously not too many ways to detour trains out of there because of, you've got, it's a major route. And obviously Waycross, we've talked about Waycross before on the show and what a hub that is for CSX in the South. So, definitely caused a lot of issues for CSX for several days.
Wow. Well, for a while we didn't have any problems, and all of a sudden we get a whole bunch of them within a month here. So, what is the next one here?
The other derailment that happened, this happened last week. It was out in New Mexico, right on the border of Arizona and New Mexico.
Okay.
It was near Interstate 40, and it supposedly shut down Interstate 40 because there was quite a fire and quite a big cloud of black smoke, and a lot of people were kind of comparing it to East Palestine, and just the look of it. It happened out in the middle of nowhere, but this is a major, major route for BNSF. This is what they call the Transcon route that goes by several of the rail cams, actually, on virtual rail fans. So a lot of people on there were obviously upset because there weren't too many trains that were running, in certain parts of the country, especially in the Southwest. So, major issue for BNSF. A lot of people were saying, Mike, on different, message boards and stuff that, BNSF has been credited for not doing this precision railroading thing. Well, they're really doing it. They've just never openly admitted that they're really doing it. So, the train again was probably too long. There's a lot of things that people think are in play with the way the cars were set up in the train. like derailments we've seen in years past. But just another example of greed, you know. And last night it was interesting. I was talking to you about how I was out rail fanning. Last night on the scanner, one of the engineers over at Conway Yard said, what would the shareholders do? Is that has become the new moniker on a Class 1 railroad, or Class 1 railroad, it seems like, Mike. The shareholders are more important than the employees. The hedge funds are taking over these companies, and, you know, it's going to lead to more and more issues and just more and more problems for these big railroads. It's a shame because it's making them look worse and worse by the day.
Wow. That's all we need to have something like that happen, that's for sure.
And, you know, that leads us into, I don't know if you saw the article on railwayage.com, but there's an article called NS versus CSX recrews. And obviously a recrew is when a train has to, you know, the crew runs out of time. They typically, yeah. 12 hours is the maximum that a crew has when they're on duty, that they can, you know, be on a train. So then they obviously, if the crew runs out of time, they have to call out a recrew. Well, let's just say this. Beginning in May of 2022, Norfolk Southern has averaged more than 4.3 times the number of unplanned recrews relative to CSX, despite having greater than 800 more train and engine service employees. Well, I mean, so they're talking how this sounds really bad. Let's see. You know, 100 recrews a week looks unusually low for a Class 1 railroad. But then it just seems like if you look at Norfolk Southern, per million car miles, they have the most of all the big railroads last year. They had 6.9 recrews. BNSF had 6.7. And then everyone else was 3.3 or under. And even CSX during their meltdown in 2022, they had 1.6. So something's going on here, Mike, where I think what's happening is maybe they're calling out these crews too early. Maybe these crews are being asked to do too much en route. I think the trains are too long. I mean, even on a route like the Chicago line, where it's flatter, it seems like these trains, Mike, I don't look up every day like a heritage unit or some of these units I trace, but let's be honest. I mean, if a train is taking almost 8 to 9 hours to go from Conway to Toledo and is an intermodal train, there's something wrong. I mean, there's obviously, you know, poor planning on the dispatching side. You know, obviously the people who are working along the tracks, maybe they're being given too much time, you know, and they need to, you know, so there's, it seems like it's a combination of things where, you know, this is why Norfolk Southern is in the mess they're in. And a lot of people keep saying if they stay and keep doing what they're doing with Alan Shaw, it's the Sancora Group is going to come in with the precision scheduling model again, and they're going to scarf them up, and it's going to be a hostile takeover.
Boy, you bet, though. And I'll tell you, people having their shares invested in the railroads, things start going downhill as far as accidents and things like that, derailment. So these people's stocks are going to go down quite
right,
rapidly,
yeah.
If it keeps up persistent with garbage management and stuff. Jeez.
Oh, no question about it, man. You're 1,000% right about that. And you know what's scary about it now is the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. This is another article. You know, they've kind of done like a little flip-flop here where they for a long time, they were not in favor of this Ancora Group taking over Norfolk Southern. But now they've kind of gotten in bed with Ancora, and a lot of people are wondering, like, you know, is this going to lead to, like, the group, supposedly they're saying that it has now come to light that the BLET has entered into the Memorandum of Understanding with Ancora, and they feel like, you know, they said that, you know, the BLET is based solely on promises if a takeover were successful. So to me, it looks like they're hoping that this they're calling, a lot of people are writing this down, or in this article, they're saying that the cheerleading of this hostile takeover, and CORE is going to give this union and these people what they want. You know, basically they've decided to sell out. They sold out to Ancora, and obviously they are more worried about, you know, being in bed with these investors and these, this hedge fund than actually helping out their employees is what it sounds like. You know, it sounds like somebody says, meanwhile, the BLET is playing Judas and has chosen to sell out workers so they can do a, get a do-over on past negotiations when their organization fell short on the, with the NS. You know, and so it's very controversial because obviously they're hypocritical. You know, it was, I guess, one day before they announced they're backing Ancora, they'd given their word that to the AFL-CIO's Transportation Trades Department that they were standing with them. So, you know, Mike, it just shows that, you know, these people who are running these railroads now, these hedge funds, these Hunter Harrison protege-type peoples, these are some of the most crooked people probably in society today. And, you know, the sad thing is our railroads and our economy and logistics and things that are matter to this country could really be affected by this. And I think if nothing is done by this, it's going to be a dark day for the railroads, especially at the Class 1 level.
Wow. Huh. Boy, I would say it sounds like disaster in the making. Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, it's funny because, like, I mean, you hear all these stories about how, like, you know, the railroads, you know, have all these issues and stuff. And from what I've heard from a lot of people said is, like, this is just the tip of the iceberg, like with Norfolk Southern. And I just don't understand how a railroad could even survive this. Like, to me, like, if you want to, like, cut things this much to the bone, I mean, like, the way they're running it, dude, it's almost like there could be nothing left of this railroad. I mean, if these people get in, so I don't understand why a union would want to support these people, but it's got to be for one reason, for greed and for money.
Yep.
And the head honchos of this union must be getting wealthy off of this. So it's if I was an engineer or conductor or anyone who worked for NS, I'd be scared shitless right now because this is a really bad spot they're in.
Wow. I don't know. I don't think the unions are going to go along with this, so if this ever happens, I can't see why, unless, like you say, greed over money, and money is the root of all evil.
Yep. Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, it's there's no question. I mean, it's and the thing, what I don't understand is, like, so the quote in this article says, Ancora wants to turn back the clock and return to the failed precision railroading model with Jamie Boychuk's help that other Class 1 railroads are now abandoning. They've been pointing, you know, they're saying that, you know, but, you know, the East Palestine thing was Alan Shaw's fault and his team, but
yeah.
Then the other side is saying that precision railroading caused the problem with East Palestine. So to me, I think there's a meeting coming up soon. I think it's like May 9th or so. I think we're going to find out more about this. God almighty, man, I hope it doesn't all go through because it could be just disaster.
Well, I guess the only thing we can do is wait and see what happens.
Very true. Yep, yeah. That's definitely true. There's no question about that. Just got to play it out, and we'll go from there. But the only other thing I saw was this week the Brightline out in California and Las Vegas, they are talking about getting their trains from Siemens, which is a transportation company, and they're really getting serious about building this now. Like, they supposedly want to lay down the tracks between Interstate 15, and they're, you know, the only thing is where would it connect into the other railroads, but they want to have a high-speed train out there, and more power to them. A lot of people are moving there, and I think it makes a ton of sense.
Oh, absolutely, though. Yeah. Hey, you mentioned Brightline, though. I thought I seen something about Brightline over in the UK doing something over there overseas. You know anything about that? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead there, Mike.
Yeah, I seen something about Brightline is also extending their stuff, though. By the way, for you those wondering what Brightline is, it's another form of passenger rail service, so such as Amtrak. So let you I put that out, though, clarify that, though. Somebody may not know that. But yeah, I did see something about Brightline extending their corporate over and overseas somewhere, too. I didn't have much time to look at it, though, but I caught a glimpse of it, though, and it stated something overseas, UK, England, I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I see something on the article, Mike, that says, the trains will be based on a version of Siemens Valero platform that operates in Europe.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's going to be similar to that. Like I said, the system will be built in the middle of Interstate 15 and feature zero-emission, fully electric trains capable of speeds of 200 miles an hour.
Wow, were they trying to beat the Trans-Europe Express out there? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of people going to Vegas from California with a train going that kind of speed, so... fascinating times. I'm curious to see how quickly they get this built, because I think people are going to be really interested to take one of these trips, into an area like Vegas where it's a tourist destination, and who wouldn't want to get there quicker with all the attractions they've got?
Wow. Okay, I see we're about 23:13 coming up here, so... Okay, I was going to mention, I did a video on Nice and White Satin and Funeral for a Friend, though, while back, regarding the trains, locomotives, where do they go to die, and such things like that.
Sure.
I seen my views gone up, though, and I started looking around for it stuff, and I find it in the music section. With Elton John's name, Bryan Adams, and the Police in the mix with it, too. So what I think is maybe they acknowledge my efforts, though, and they put it in the mix with their videos through YouTube. Either that may be the case, or did YouTube just do it on their own? I don't know, but I have a feeling some of them over there, over across the big pond, seen it. Anyway, I kind of was surprised because I even got a picture of it, though. Right underneath my video had Elton John's name and Bryan Adams and the Police. So I kind of was flabbergasted. But my views have suddenly gone up on that video, too. So something's going on. Also, I was going to say, at one time I was going to abandon Facebook, and I tried to delete my thing on there, and it wouldn't delete. So I said, the hell with it. I'll make use of it, but I'll be damn well careful what I say and do on it, because it's not like everything's free on that, though. Anyway, I've been posting some of my videos and stuff from YouTube over to Facebook, though, and all of a sudden, though, got more subscribers. So I guess
that's
Facebook
awesome,
is good for one thing, I guess, for that. So anyway, anything else, sir?
No, I mean, the only other thing I saw was the port in New Orleans is recording record container growth. As of May 2nd, they said they're moving a total of over 130,000 20-foot equivalent units during the fiscal year, the third quarter of this year. So they're talking about a 19% increase year over year. And, you know, they have not seen any container volume like this in a few years since all that supply chain mess. So it's very good for New Orleans there. Obviously, it's a port that is vital to our country. It's great for six Class 1 railroads go into New Orleans, Mike. So this is a great opportunity for, you know, these railroads to grow their businesses into New Orleans. And I think, you know, that's an area, too, over the years that, let's be honest, has struggled, you know, because of hurricanes. It's not the wealthiest area in this country.
Yeah.
Anything that can, you know, boost the economy down there, Mike, I think is great. And I think for the railroads down there, it's interesting. You know, there was talk a few weeks ago when we were last on the show that they were saying that they, Norfolk Southern, was cutting back on service there, which I thought was kind of silly because, like, to me, like, that's the biggest port on the Gulf outside of maybe Galveston and the areas down in Texas. So, to me, I would go all in on an area like New Orleans because I think, to me, there's so much industry down there with oil rigs, and it's pretty easy to get to for the most part. I mean, so, like, I would say that, you know, if you can own that area, you know, geez, I think you're in the, technically in the middle of the country. You should have a lot of opportunities to grow from there.
Well, it could be a gold mine, that's for sure. Hey, there's one other thing, too, though, I've seen. I don't know if you posted this. I think it might have been the Railroad Tie Spiker. He, not posted, but texted me something about out there in Muncie, Indiana, out there, or Kokomo, somewhere out there. Apparently somebody had witnessed, and heard, though, that some of their trains out there, one of them was in excess of 14,000 feet. That is a big train. That's more than 2 miles. Close to 2.5 miles now. What the heck is going on with that, I wonder? I don't know, but I haven't got a hold of the Railroad Tie Spiker lately, though, so I think it came from him, though. He mentioned that.
Yeah, there's been some of that, Mike. They've tried to, I will, and this is the thing, Alan Shaw and that Joe Heinrichs or Henrichs guy with CSX, they have tried to cut back on that, but there still are trains that you're seeing that are running at that length, which I do not understand. I don't know who wants that. I don't know what's the point of it. To me, there's more risk of a derailment. And then I guess the thing is, too, Mike, is like when that train gets to its destination, wherever it is, that is a monster of a train to put away and sort. So, like, to me, I don't know. I'm not a fan of stuff like that. I think that's crazy. You know, just hire more people and run, you know, run shorter trains. That's what they got to do.
That's what they need to do. And speaking of recrewing and trains, though, I think down in CSX on Newcastle Line near Willard, I guess they're having problems trying to find crews to take these trains over because one time down there, they had one track only operating. They had bumper-to-bumper trains lined behind each other waiting for either for a recrew or trying to get into Willard Yard. So I think I counted about 5 of them from Willard all the way clear back to, in fact, before Greenwich. All stopped, though, waiting for either a crew or somebody to take them over or something. I don't know, but lately it's been really hectic down there. Every day is something going on down there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it just sounds like unorganized chaos. I don't understand why they just don't run a few more trains and just hire a few more people. They've got the money to do it, but I don't know. It's railroads are a stubborn place to work for, kind of, because they don't listen to anything the employee has to say.
Absolutely. Okay, I see we're at 23:20 here, so you got anything last thing to bring up before I have to turn it back over?
No, that's it, Mike. Good to be back on with you, and looking forward to coming on here once a month and talking about the important topics or, you know, stuff that relates to the rail industry.
Okay, very good. Next person month will be June 1st. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's actually the...
Right on the 1st, yep.
25th anniversary of the Conrail breakup.
There you go, yep. All right, very good. Thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate you coming on here, and we'll be talking with you, and I'll be looking at some of your info that you send me. I don't always get the answer, though, because I'm pulling what hair I got left out of my head on other things around here, and between the Haney place and my mother and a few other things going on, though. I ain't got much time for anything, but anyway, other than go out and get some video to make money, you know. It ain't much, but it's something, you know. Every little bit is something. All right, very good, Dave. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Mike. Have a nice night.
You too. Well, we'll see you next month here. Okay, that was David Coleman from around the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, updating us on what's going on with the railroad. So with that, that's enough out of me, though. Time is probably expired. It's probably 2 minutes. I try to keep it like 20 minutes if I can. Anyway, I'll turn it back over to Net Control. KA2PTE with WB4AIO, Natalie and Hon. This is N8RBI.
All right, Mike, thank you. N8RBI from KA2PTE at the end of round one of our LibertyNet current events discussion. And thank you, Mr. Coleman, for calling in and letting us know what's going on with the railroads. It's a sounds like a pretty complex situation there. And, yeah, I agree. It is unfortunate, but the Jewish power structure there, when you we're talking about on our net a lot, which is up in the New York area, Wall Street, and all of these outfits that say, well, a railroad must be profitable to our shareholders at all costs, all the time. Everything should be always profitable. And it's that insane strain that gets passed down to the workers, and they don't really have any way of getting together and, I guess, addressing any grievances. That's basically the whole problem we've got, I guess, not only in railroad, but just about any other sector that's out there. And that's sort of what January 6th was all about in 2020, was failure of the government to address grievances. And basically, Wall Street seems to call the shots for everything, even our political system, even D.C. They're paying their salaries. Probably they have terrific-looking retirement portfolios and everything like that. And that is more important than hearing why this train derailed, or, you know, why wasn't this employee given enough time off and he got derelict on duty due to fatigue and stuff like that. And they don't want to hear about those things. Those are things they should be listening to improve their railroad from the bottom up. You know, the blue-collar person working on the railroad, whether they're inspecting the tracks, driving the trains, or inspecting the freight cars for safety, they are the bottom bricks in the pyramid, really, that support it all the way up to the top. And if you get a few loose bricks down there at the bottom of your pyramid, your whole darn thing comes down. This is what I don't get. It should be simple. Simple, basic business understanding. But these Jews that are in charge of these Wall Street operations and these banks, they are totally disconnected. They don't really care what the bottom brick has to say. They just expect it to be there all the time supporting them. And that's kind of how I look at it. But good reports there from Mr. Coleman, and we'll hear from him, I guess, next month in June. So we'll look forward to that. And I guess what I'll do is I'll get us started into the second round of our LibertyNet current events discussion, and I will see if anyone out there on CQ100 might want to check in and be with us again before we start in the next round. So any hams out there listening that might want to join us and check in, I'll give you an opportunity. You can let me know your call sign either by voice or put it on the QSO TV screen, and I'll check you in if you like. So I'll drag my feet a little here and give a lesson. All right, nobody heard, nothing seen on the Kiso TV image screen sharing mechanism, so we'll go right into the second round here. Excellent first round, lots of great stuff out of all our participants, and I like Jan's answer to my question about this, I guess as Anders Breivik, and I looked it up a little bit more, and I found a couple of interesting articles here, and I guess I'll read this one. It's from TheGuardian.com, and it's about that Anders Breivik incident, and it says, Norwegian mass killer appears before parole hearing. Far-right mass murderer has served 10 years of a 21-year sentence for shootings in 2011. Let's see, it says, Anders Breivik, the Norwegian far-right mass murderer behind the country's worst peacetime massacre, has appeared in court asking to be released on parole after serving 10 years in prison in near isolation for killing 77 people in a double bomb and gun attack in 2011. And I guess this article says it's 2 years old, more than 2 years old. So kind of getting us up to speed here. Breivik, who legally changed his name to Fjotolf Hansen in 2017, attacked the country's government quarter in Oslo with a van bomb before heading to a youth camp being held by the country's Labour Party on the island of Utøya, where he killed 69 people, most of them teenagers, in a gun attack. During a long speech at the hearing, in which Breivik flashed a Nazi salute, he said he had put violence behind him, offering to give up far-right politics and live abroad if he were released. Today I strongly disassociate myself from violence and terror, he said. I hereby give you my word of honor that this is behind me forever. If granted a parole, which experts say is highly unlikely, he offered to live in the Arctic or a non-Western country. Breivik also attempted to disavow responsibility for the massacre he perpetrated, claiming he had been radicalized ahead of the attack, a claim rejected in the aftermath of his killings when he claimed he had been recruited as a commander in a far-fetched conspiracy involving a secret Christian military order plotting an anti-Muslim revolution. According to his lawyer, Breivik is seeking to call only one witness, Per Oberg, a Swedish neo-Nazi. Despite the gravity of his crimes, Breivik, 42, is entitled under Norwegian law to apply for parole after serving a decade in prison of his 21-year sentence and can reapply each year for a parole hearing. The hearing, based being held in a gymnasium at a prison in the southwest of Oslo under the auspices of the Telemark District Court, is expected to last 3 days and is being live-streamed. Appearing on the first day of the hearing in a black suit and gold tie in his first public appearance in 5 years, Breivik entered the court with a white supremacist message attached to his lapel and pasted on his briefcase. Breivik was led into the hearing without handcuffs by officers clutching a sheaf of papers. During the opening presentation by the state prosecutor, Breivik held up the message on his briefcase, drawing a reprimand from the court. Few observers in Norway believe Breivik has any realistic prospect of being released following the hearing, instead voicing their concern he would use the occasion to broadcast his extremist views. Families of the victims and survivors had feared Breivik could inspire like-minded ideologies and grandstand his extreme views during the hearing. The only thing I'm afraid of is if he has an opportunity to talk freely and convey his extreme views to people who have the same mindset, said Lisbeth Christine Reinoland, who heads a family and survivor support group, before the hearing. Since being in prison, Breivik has continued to try to represent himself as a far-right European leader, attempting to rally support for his views. He has been trying to start a fascist party in prison and reached out by mail to right-wing extremists in Europe, and the prison officials seized many of those letters, fearing Breivik would inspire others to commit violent attacks. So let me just stop right there. That's an interesting point that's been made a couple of times in this article, is they've kind of realized that there are other people out there that think like this. It might be enough to push them over the edge. You know, now how could that be? You know, how can that be that this is like they try to make him look like he's a, you know, one in a million nut job, right? That, you know, is a terrorist and he should be in prison the rest of his life. So I guess, you know, them saying that they're fearing he would, he's just by him being in prison and speaking about what he needs to say is going to inspire other people to go out there and do that. That's sort of a stretch, you know. I mean, he doesn't really have control over anybody else but himself, but that is an interesting statement that they've made a couple of times here. And his obviously, he's got a little bit more leeway in, I guess, Norway, where he can actually make that Heil Hitler salute, and he can actually speak freely in his defense, and he can actually, I guess, have paper and pens, and he doesn't have to wear an orange jumper. You know, like here in the U.S., if that happens, you're in that orange jumper. You cannot put any symbology. You know, you can't. Your rights are limited. You're basically stripped of all your rights before you've even had a chance to go to trial, which is where we're at. But obviously, I guess at this time in Norway, they weren't quite that extreme yet, and he at least got to say some of the things that they say were unpopular. But people, obviously, they're admitting here that many people out there would identify with what he's saying. So why isn't he just allowed to say it? And sort of like we do on the Liberty Net here, we speak our mind, we have our free speech, we exercise it every week, and we don't force anybody to come here. We don't force anybody to stay tuned, you know, or else we'll revoke your travel privileges. We just let this stuff get out there, and we let people make up their own minds about how they want to run their life, basically. So it is kind of interesting here with this incident, and I guess again it escaped my radar entirely that and I happened to bump into it on Jan's site there, and I'm going to keep looking at it some more, because every time I read a little bit more about it, it kind of builds like a bigger picture on it. And like I said, I get the impression that this stuff hits the younger people the worst. I mean, he was I forget how old he was when this happened, but you know, you're actually a young person in your country, and you're brought up a certain way to you know, respect your country, defend it, and when you see it going to hell in a handbasket, whether it's feminism, which really feminism is really a socialist, communist sort of weaponization of women to empower them to be, I guess, out in the workforce making money and earning salaries just as good as men can do. You know, that's the whole point of, I guess, feminism, and it destroys families. So I remember reading his background, this Breivik's background, and he was from a home like that where I think it was just his mother taking care of him, and perhaps could he have been exposed to feminism, and that could be why, you know, that is lack of the father, lack of the family structure, you know, and that is really how the communist mass destruction system works. It attacks the family structure of the people that are in whatever nation they want to subvert, and you know, what goes around comes around. It winds up, the children bear the consequences of all the dysfunction, or all the dysfunction, the shortages of labor, shortages of jobs, shortages of money. You wind up with alcoholism, you wind up with drug addictions and things like that, and it's, you know, literally a ticking time bomb for young people. We've got it over here in spades, really. We've had it over here for quite a long time, and instead of Breivik, obviously, you know, getting addicted to opioids, marijuana, booze, or whatever it was, he released it for good or bad, and 70-some-odd people died as a result of it. But, I don't know, the impression I got was if he didn't do it, there would be probably a lot more dying of what I just described. You know, it's like a disease. It's like a social disorder that the globalists are putting not only in Norway, but plenty of other countries all over the world. And here's somebody that stood up and said, no, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to do something completely different. Maybe people will pay attention to this. Maybe, you know, I need to make an example of myself and put my own life at risk. And, you know, I think sometimes that's the only way people, you know, unfortunately, we pay attention. You know, what do we used to pay attention to mass shootings, right? Years and years ago, they were in the news. There was one of them. Oh, my God, Sandy Hook. You know, then again, another one. Now we're just numb to the, we're numb to these mass shootings now. It's like, it's a way of life here in the U.S. So, I don't know. I agree, you know, it's killing 77 people on a rampage is a terrible tragedy, but we're accepting that now. We've actually become a nation, at least over here. I don't know about other parts of the world, but if we were to hear something like this happened in the U.S., I don't think any of us would be surprised, you know, and that's sort of where we've evolved to, for what it's worth. So with that, I'll end my second round contribution, and I'll pass it over to Kevin, WB4AIO, who's got our guests on the patch. That would be Nat in Canada and Mr. Jan Lamprecht in South Africa. So we'll see what they got for us on the second round. Over to you, Kevin, WB4AIO from KA2PTE.
KA2PTE. And hold on a second. Why is that not going over the air? Hold on. Hello, 1, 2, 3, 4. There we go. KA2PTE, this is WB4AIO, and let us get it immediately over to Natalie in Ontario.
Thank you, Kevin. To answer your question, Steve, the white wolf was known as Baron Stradom. He carried out a shooting spree in Stradom Square in central Pretoria, South Africa, November of 1988. And he killed 8 people and he injured 16. I thought I'd let you know that. All right. German politician in Chancellor's party hospitalized after being beaten up while campaigning. A German politician in Chancellor Olaf Scholz's party had to undergo surgery after being beaten up while campaigning the ruling Social Democrats, said on Saturday. Matthias Eck, a member of the European Parliament standing for re-election next month, was attacked while putting up posters in Dresden on Friday evening. Well, there's worse things that can happen. You could get electrocuted like one of the EFF members did in South Africa, but then there's no loss there. He was taken to hospital and required surgery for his injuries. Police said the 41-year-old was hit and kicked by 4 men and that the same group had apparently attacked a Green Party worker minutes before in the same street. Democracy is threatened by this kind of act, Mr. Scholz told the Congress of European Socialist Parties in Berlin on Saturday. It was the latest in a series of incidents raising political tensions in Germany ahead of the polls. Mr. Schultz launched their official campaign for the June 9 vote with a rally last week in Hamburg, the Chancellor's home city. Interior Minister Nancy Faeser, also a Social Democrat, said that if it's proven that the assault on Mr. Eck was politically motivated, it would represent a serious attack on democracy. Many of the incidents have occurred in the former communist east of the country, where the far right and anti-establishment alternative for Germany party is expected to make gains in the European elections and in the German state elections in the autumn. So also, again, what Steve was talking about, we've just become numb to these kind of things happening.
Well, we're becoming, in the West generally, we're becoming more like third world countries. And so in third world countries, murders on every street corner and murders of political candidates or beatings of political candidates are more or less the norm. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's happening.
Look what happens in Russia when you run against Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, well, I will say, though, that all these people saying this is a threat to democracy, that is a threat to democracy. I don't worship democracy. I think it's a terrible system. So I don't really care if somebody's a threat to democracy. maybe that's a good thing, because democracy is a terrible way to pick leaders. I mean, just go down to the Walmart. I don't know if you have Walmarts in Canada, but go down to some big superstore and just look carefully at the people you see browsing the aisles there, and look at the clothes they're wearing, and look at the way they comport themselves, and listen to the way they speak. These are the majority. These are the average, and they are the people who hold the crux of power in any election, because there are more of them than there are of us. And so therefore, do they really look like people who can make important decisions for the course of our future, for our nation?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely
I mean, they can't even make decisions for their own lives. I mean,
that's right.
And so they are just going to be manipulated and used and tricked by clever people who run the media to vote whichever way the clever people with money who run the media, mainly Jews, want them to vote. And so their democracy, mass democracy, is a very dangerous, very evil form of government where people can control the idiots. And by controlling the idiots, they rule like dictators from behind the scenes, and nobody knows who they are, almost nobody. And I don't like that.
No, nor do I. And Gail has said there is a movie called 22 July about Andrei Breivik and the massacre.
Okay. Thank you.
She sent it through the email.
Very good. Glad to hear from Gail.
Yes. And otherwise, I'm just keeping it short and sweet. Over to Jan.
Okay, Jan, it is your turn on the Liberty Net.
Thank you very much. I've got a bunch of things to inundate you with. Okay, first things first. You know, here we are talking a bit about white people, white men and whites saying, you know, maybe we should blow away some people on the other side. But I did a video about a year ago, and it was a video that I put an insane amount of work into. It was called "Can 50 Million Blacks Kill 4 Million Whites in 2 Weeks?" And it's based on a post on the social media in South Africa by a young black who actually posted on Twitter, and he posted and he said, you know, there are 50 million of us, and there's only, he said 5 million, it's actually 4 million. And he said, there's only 4 million whites. You know, we can kill them all in 2 weeks. And I was like, whoa, eh? So that is an example of total and utter hate speech. And you won't see it. You won't see it anywhere on the news. You won't see them saying, we got to grab that black guy and lock him away. And the guy was a member of the EFF. The EFF is Economic Freedom Fighters, mm-hmm. which is just a fancy name for a bunch of black communists, okay? Let me give you a quick rundown on South African black politics in South Africa. All black politics in South Africa is one version of communism or another. And sometimes it also contains a bit of racism, like the PAC, the Pan-Africanist Congress. But all black politics is a version of communism. And if you go and you look into the history of South Africa, the people pushing communism all through the decades were Jews. Jews were running the Communist Party of South Africa. Jews were editing the African Communist, etc. All of South African politics is one version of communism or another, and it's all about killing the whites, stealing all their stuff, etc., etc. But anyway, I did a whole video about that because what I decided to do was I decided to use some military mathematics and actually look into the possibility of if the blacks did try to do things like this, how many whites would they actually kill and how many of them would be killed? And it was a very detailed video that I did, and I do want to do a follow-up on it. But the EFF is run by a guy called Julius Malema, and I want to tell you something. Julius Malema has himself he's been talking about killing whites, okay, for more than a decade. And Julius Malema has made so many statements, and it's on film, by the way. It's on film. You can actually see him talking about revolution. You know, these stupid, worthless blacks, okay, have had their communist revolution. They've had it, okay? And yet they are still talking about the fact that they need more communist revolution. And they then start saying things like, when you're in a revolution, you've got to kill. You know, Julius Malema says that to a stadium full of blacks, and all the blacks are like screaming positively about it. I must tell you, and there are things that people don't know about Julius Malema. People don't know that Julius Malema got money from Jews, that there are Jews that gave him money. People don't know that Julius Malema's attorneys are all Jews, and that in his organization, because there's a bunch of blacks, okay? So, and it just shows you how the Jews move around. For example, here's a black communist organization that's all for blacks and for communism, and yet you'll find, quotes, whites in that organization, and most of those whites are actually Jews. There's a Jewish woman who wears like a red communist cap from, you know, the kind of stuff from the Bolshevik Revolution, and she wrote a book called No More White Lies. No More White Lies. Well, I'd like to say the real thing is no more Jewish lies, okay? Because the whites aren't the ones that are lying, okay? And it reminds me of David Horowitz. Some people might not know, but in America, there was a group, a violent group of blacks called the Black Panthers in the 1960s, I think it was. And one of the, quotes, members of that organization was a Jew called David Horowitz. So here's a Jew pushing violence, etc., in America and so forth. So one thing I've noticed is that you'll find that there are Jews floating all around this Julius Malema, and Malema's done things. He's done all kinds of things. He's openly on multiple occasions called for the slaughter of whites. And do you know, Julius Malema has not spent one day in jail. He's not even been fined once.
Isn't that interesting? Not
once. Eh? And you know, when I was in court with the Jews in 2020 and 2021, my attorney and I had long discussions about hate speech. What exactly is hate speech? Well, I want to tell you, I know the definition of hate speech. And these blacks are breaking the law par excellence, okay? And nothing happens to them. And you know what? Not the president of the country, not any one of the politicians in parliament ever turns around and says, hey, you know, that Malema guy, you know, look at him. He's threatening the white minority. he's threatening the white minority, and you know, he should be shut up or something. Nothing. Not one of the black presidents of South Africa or any of the senior members of parliament have ever said anything about Malema. And Malema's got seats in parliament now. So, you know, that just should just show you, you know, this is what happens when whites lose control of their society. You lose control of your society, and now you are hoping that the others will implement the constitution, and you are in for the shock of your life. So, anyway, let me move on to the next thing. Feminism, about Anders Breivik and feminism. If you take a look at Jews, you'll see that all these weird things that Jews are doing, all of these weird, creepy things are to destroy the family, but it's mainly focused on breaking the power of the white male. The white male's power is broken, and they do things so that the white women become paranoid about the white men, and they start hating their own men. You know, all of these sick things come from Jews. About the white wolf in South Africa, Barend Strydom. Thanks for that, Natalie. His name was Barend Strydom. He's the guy who went on that rampage in the 1980s. I did discover in the last 10 years, I did come across, you know, and nowadays everything is so hush-hush, okay? Everything is so hush-hush. The mass media prints nothing but errant garbage, and you never get to hear anything that's important. But one thing that I came across about several years ago was there was a young white Afrikaans guy. He might have been a teenager. And this young Afrikaans guy, all he had was a .303 bolt-action rifle, and he walked into a township and he shot up some blacks. I think he only killed about three or something. But just to let you know that you know, other young whites also, you know, showed their unhappiness, etc. And the next thing I want to mention is that prior to my trip to the U.S., I wanted to put out three videos. I wanted to do videos about the things that I have discovered quietly since my last trip to the U.S. in 2019. I've been doing research and I've been digging around because I'm fascinated by the racial conflict that is otherwise known as the, quotes, liberation wars of Africa. And I found some things a couple of years ago about the Portuguese, because even though we in Rhodesia and South Africa had Portuguese colonies as our neighbors, there are many things we actually didn't know about the Portuguese, and there are many things that have never been written up. And it's horrific how much of our history of the fight against the blacks, the so-called liberation wars, that how much of that stuff has not been published properly. And you know, even our leaders or the whites who led the countries, about the only guy who wrote his own memoirs was Ian Smith of Rhodesia. And his memoirs make for some interesting reading. The South Africans wrote some memoirs, but not many. And I must tell you, Kevin, that I don't believe that we know that most of the stuff that went on, that there's lots that we don't know. But anyway, I did three videos with some information that I'd uncovered after lots and lots of research in recent years, and I created three long videos. The first video was about the secret military alliance that existed between South Africa, Portugal, and Rhodesia. The whites had a secret military alliance to fight the blacks and to help each other. And so I go into a lot of detail about that. It's actually known as ALCORA, and it's something that you won't find in any of the books that were written by our people. But I uncovered it by getting stuff from actually ultimately Portuguese academics in Portugal, can you believe?
Interesting.
And So Alcora is actually a fascinating thing, and I want to just mention a few things. That one of the most important things that comes out in this research of mine, because I go through various academic papers, is the tremendous, tremendous efforts of the Boers, the Afrikaners, the tremendous efforts of the Boers since the 1950s to try and save Africa from black rule, black communist rule. And the extent to which they went astounded me. The first white Afrikaans leader after the first white Afrikaans leader in the time of apartheid was a guy called D.F. Malan. Do you know that D.F. Malan in 1950 asked the United States government if South Africa could become part of NATO? And you know what the American government said to him? They said to him, no, it's not possible because NATO is a regional alliance. So that's how the South Africans were fobbed off. But the South Africans went on to have conferences with the French, the British, the Portuguese, and other whites, possibly even the Belgians. But they went to have conferences as far back as the mid-1950s to come up with a strategy so that all of the Western world doesn't lose Africa to Russia. And the efforts of the South Africans for those decades and the role that this in, if you watch those videos, you'll be stunned by the efforts, all of which came from the Boers, the Afrikaners who ruled South Africa. For decades and decades, the things they tried to do to work with Europeans, to work with other whites, they even wanted to work with the British so that the British don't lose their empire, etc. You know, all in the same vein as, you know, Hitler. Hitler loved the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that was the first video I did, was about Alcora. The next video I did was about the Portuguese and NATO and the amazing success of the Portuguese in working with NATO and the things they did. And there's someone I want to mention. The leader of Portugal was a guy called Salazar, and Ian Smith met Salazar face to face. And Salazar was basically a fascist. And Ian Smith actually writes in his memoirs that Salazar had blue eyes. And Salazar was clearly a racist, and he wanted to ensure that Portugal does not lose its colonies in Africa. And Ian Smith says that everything they write about Salazar is a pack of lies. He's actually a very wonderful man. And Ian Smith even said that if Salazar had lived, because he was very old, if Salazar had lived, that Rhodesia would still have existed today. Anyway, Salazar died. But what is interesting also is that Salazar actually, I lost my train of thought there. There's something I wanted to mention about Salazar. Damn, my apologies. I can't think of it.
No problem. You have so many facts at your fingertips. Every now and then, one's bound to fall to the floor.
May I continue?
Certainly, absolutely.
Okay. So it'll come to me. Ah, yes. This is what I wanted to tell you. Do you know that Salazar and the Portuguese are responsible for getting West Germany into NATO? West Germany.
No, I did not know that.
They were the first, and the West Germans had their first military base outside Germany in Portugal. Anyway, so the whole thing is the next video is all about the stuff that the Portuguese did with NATO and even with America. And believe it or not, amazingly, the Portuguese were killing blacks even with weapons that came from the U.S. Air Force. So the final video in the series, though I might add a couple of others later, but I wanted to touch on these high-level things. The final video in the series is a secret that I uncovered that I just couldn't believe when I heard it originally. I was going through the memoirs of Forster, the Prime Minister of South Africa, and it turns out that the South Africans were doing their utmost. I mean their utmost. They went to such lengths. They did their utmost to try and save the Portuguese so that the Portuguese can hang on to their colonies. And among the things that they came up with, apart from assisting them militarily, even giving them weapons for free, etc. But one of the things that the South Africans did was they and the Portuguese struck a deal. And the bottom line was that the South Africans, the Boers, were the ones who said to the Portuguese, in order to win your wars, you need more white people in Africa. And so what they did was they came up with a plan to build a huge lake, a huge man-made lake in Mozambique. You may be familiar with Lake Kariba of Rhodesia. Lake Kariba is one of the biggest lakes in the world. By volume, it is the biggest lake in the world, man-made lake in the world. But the South Africans and Portuguese worked out a plan to finance a huge lake in central Mozambique. And that lake has been built. And the lake ostensibly was to produce cheap electricity that South Africa would buy most of. But the plan was to bring in 1 million Portuguese people to settle them around the lake, because the region is a good region and they can do farming and irrigation. And that lake was the beginning of bringing 1 million Portuguese into Mozambique. And I must tell you, that would have been a total game changer in terms of white population. The lake was finished in the mid-1970s, but then the Portuguese government collapsed. Now, in Angola, which is on the west coast, the South Africans built at least 2 similar hydroelectric projects in the southern part of Angola, to do a similar thing so that 500,000 Portuguese could come and live in the southern part of Angola. That also exists. So there are lakes that have been built. They are fully functioning, etc. But they weren't built for blacks. They were built for whites. And while I was actually digging into this, I actually discovered, to my amazement, that Rhodesia also had like a little plan to try and get 1 million whites into Rhodesia. And unfortunately, the Rhodesian plan was a big flop. But the Portuguese plan, if the Portuguese had survived for longer and hadn't had a coup d'etat, it could have been a total game changer. You have no idea what the effect would have been if we'd had 1.5 million Portuguese that eventually come into Africa. It would have been total game changer. The blacks would never have been able to defeat the Portuguese, and South Africa and Rhodesia would have existed to this day. But that is what I put into those videos. I just want to mention something else. Secession. Secession is the only thing that's important in South Africa for whites. For whites, there is no hope for any future at all. I did a video last year with my lawyer, because my lawyer has actually done a lot of work on secession. And anyone in South Africa who talks about secession, there's a bunch of people in the Cape talking about secession. Anyone who talks about secession in South Africa, all the work for secession was done by whites. Almost all of it by Afrikaans whites. Afrikaans whites have done all the legwork, all the legal legwork and constitutional legwork for secession. And the only issue is who's going to do it, when it's going to be done, is it feasible, etc. That in and of itself is a whole other discussion. But I must tell you that from what I've seen and what I think that ultimately secession, even if it's not perfect, I think secession is the only way forward for the whites of South Africa. I think that's the only game in town. But people are going to have to be ready for a wild time, because you can rest assured the Jews and the blacks will lose their minds. But that is the only future that can work for whites in South Africa. Another thing that I want to mention in this regard that I only discovered recently is that there's a thing called the Afrikaner Accord. The Afrikaner Accord was just prior to when the blacks took over South Africa. The Afrikaner Accord... Pardon me? The Afrikaner Accord was when there was a general, Constant Viljoen, and he was threatening to go to war. And this is just a couple of days before the blacks took over South Africa. And what came of it was this general who threatened war and all the whites and the white right, they gathered together and they signed a deal with the blacks. And my understanding is that this deal was witnessed by the American ambassador, the British ambassador, and the German ambassador. And it's called the Afrikaner Accord. And what it says is that there is that Afrikaner self-determination, in other words, freedom for the Afrikaners to rule themselves, is still on the cards. And that, you know, basically to remember that that is something that's coming. And I must tell you that the Afrikaner Accord, the Afrikaner Accord and secession, these are the only things that will give whites some kind of political tool by which they can break free one day, because that is the only future I see. I don't see anything else that could be happen, that could come of it. And just a couple of other things to, when I listened to some of your other people talking, they were talking a lot about the wealthy and businesses and corporations and stuff. And I must tell you that don't get too stuck up on the wealthy and the corporations and the rich and think that they're going to save you. They're not going to save you. This diversity and multiculturalism is a total scam. It's not going to work. You people are being lied to. One thing I want to say is that an American said to me the other day, he wrote to me and he said, bad things are happening in America. Then I wrote back to him and I said to him, bad things are happening in America because white Americans are losing control of the USA. That's the real issue. You are promoting Jews, promoting blacks. You got tons of blacks in politics. So many Jews floating around in all kinds of high positions of power. All the nasty things that are happening is because non-white Americans are taking control of your country.
Yes, thank you. That's very true. I think the only answer for whites, whether in Africa, in the Americas, or even in Europe, where we are the indigenous people for thousands of years, the only answer, the only goal that's worthy of consideration is an all-white territory for our people. It has to be all white. We can't make the mistake of thinking we can have a multiracial society ever again.
Absolutely. Totally.
Thank you very much, Jan. And I will get it back to the net. You've given us a lot to think about, and those videos sound fascinating. Hidden history that is not taught in the history books. Worthy of a look. I assume that's on your History Reviewed website.
Yes, it is. And it's also on my BitChute and Odyssey channels.
Very good. Thank you. Back to net, KA2PTE, N8RBI, and the LibertyNet phone patch, guys. This is WB4AIO.
All right, Kevin. Fine business, WB4AIO from KA2PTE in the middle of round two of our LibertyNet current events discussion. And yeah, huge stuff from Jan on that round, and made me write down a couple of things. And I guess from after Mike's turn there, I forgot to mention, I wrote down, because I think Mike was saying the money is the root of evil, and I kind of also added on to that slogan, and I added that not only is money the root of all evil, but it seems the root of all money are Jews. So, gee, I don't know, can we make some kind of connection there? I guess seems to be the case. And I think Jan was mentioning secession, you know, and it's interesting because that's a huge issue here in the States, too. There seems to be some significant signs of some states actually seceding from the Union and possibly annexing other parts of other states to become. I think there's an Idaho project out there that's been looking to annex part of, I think it's Oregon. So that's been going on for a long time, and it's basically because of what you're saying. They're just sick and tired of the multicultural disease just ruining everything, and they want to keep that territory plus take some of it away from other states that are nearby that feel like, yes, you know, our state is going to pot too, literally in some cases with pot, but we want to protect what we have left, so we want to merge with Idaho and no longer be part of Oregon, for example. But I think the one I was hearing recently was about Georgia, and that's interesting because Georgia, where's all this mess going on with Trump and those, I call them the two, I guess, subhuman African district attorneys there that obviously turned out to be corrupt, and I'm at a loss why they're not on the gallows, those prosecutors, because it turns out, you know, if you're going to claim a president of the United States, I guess, was trying to steal his own election, which is just pure stupidity, and then you lose, you can't prove it, guess what? Guess who's guilty of stealing the election? That would be you, wouldn't it? You're putting yourself out there at risk, or are you just able to show up as a prosecutor and never have any accountability for what you're doing? You're wasting your own time, you're wasting the accused's time, you're wasting the court time, you're wasting the taxpayer time, you're wasting everybody's time. And now here you are coming up and you're putting all your money on destroying Trump and it fails. Yeah, I think the gallows at minimum should be fired up. If not that, the firing squad should be practicing some George Washington type rules there, you know, with the founding fathers, because I mean, you have to punish traitors. There's no way about it. But it looks like something, I guess, with Georgia's really starting to brew with it, and the whites that are in Georgia want to get out of there because it's just turning into a literal shithole, hellhole. Maybe they're foreseeing what is in their future is what was happening to South Africa. And the state basically said, no, you can't leave, because if you leave, there's going to be no revenue to pay our salaries. So they don't want the white business owners to get out of there. So there is this talk about secession here, and it seems like that's possibly a step in the future that a lot of states are going to have to decide on. And like some of them have said that, well, we don't want Donald Trump on the ballot. I think it was Maine and might have been Arizona. But you know, if you're saying we get to say who's on the ballot and who's not, aren't you seceding? You know, you're saying that you're anti-American, you're anti Constitution, you know, you're saying that, I don't know, I mean, technically you should be able to put Charlie Brown and Snoopy on the ballot, right? And if nobody wants to vote for Charlie Brown and Snoopy, nobody votes for Charlie Brown and Snoopy. You know, you vote for whoever you think is going to be doing the best job representing your state or your country, right? So, yeah, some of these, I guess, politicians out there, they're sort of self-destructing, whether they realize it or not. But good stuff out of Jan and Kevin and Nat on that round, and I'll pass it over to Mike, N8RBI, and we'll hear what he's got for us on round two. Over to you, Mike, from KA2PTE.
Oh, wow. A lot to intake there. KA2PTE with W4ALL and Natalie and Jan. Not sure how I want to answer, though. I guess a couple of things. So, when Han was mentioning about the blacks killing off the whites, I think he mentioned, though. Well, I don't think the blacks on their own would really do it. If it wasn't for the fact that the Jewish is also controlling them. I guess they're kind of like on a click, though, in some regards to that, though. Yeah, the gross things about Jewish, though, what was the term Han used, making the white males somehow not able to, I can't remember, but I think Big Daddy Cork is supposed to come out. Hey, if you're listening, give me a ring here real quick here. So anyway, I did post a link, though, when I mentioned about Pennsylvania banning ham radio use in mobile vehicles. Yay, Big Daddy Cork. Hang on, I got to get the speaker online. Okay, now, Jan.
Yeah, am I on the sneaker phone?
Yeah.
The NFL sneaker phone?
Yeah, I have to turn the speaker on so I can actually hear you, though, because I can't.
No, I was asking if I'm on the NFL sneaker phone by Sports Illustrated.
Okay. All right, that's a good one.
Anyway, Gail's listening, but in Kentucky they're having severe storms,
mm-hmm.
and she gets cut off, and I guess the rain's really bad and lightning and stuff. So I think she's listening now, but it's Kentucky, come and go. Come and go.
Yeah, especially if she's in an area, though, like kind of off-grid, she mentioned, I believe, in the past. Yeah, I can see that, and the weather does play a big toll in cell phone use time to time, so.
Hey, good railroad thing. I had a couple questions. Well, what's a Class 1 railroad?
Class 1 railroad is where they're able to run high-speed freight and stuff, things like that. There's different classes, so. When the rails and condition of the roadway, though, on they call it the road rail, though, in good shape, though, they can go at whatever speed they feel is safe. So then there's Class 2, which is like kind of in the middle of the road. Speeds may be limited to 30 mile an hour, though. Then there's a Class 3.
Right.
Which is on railways that's really in bad shape, where they only use a section of rail, so for delivering commodities to different places and stuff, though. But there is a main line, so it's in pretty bad shape, though, but they still do use it. So we got a Class 3 here in Wellington. It's known as Lakeshore Railway Association, though, Lorain and West Virginia Railway, and they run an excursion train down, actually tracks. It's been there since 1903, so. And the rails still have they still use the original rails, and they're actually in good condition, though. 70 pound per yard rail, so.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I didn't know all that stuff. I really didn't know. Anyway, I got a bunch of crap for tonight, anyway, and I enjoy the men from South Africa, Kevin and Steve and Nat.
Excellent information from the gentleman, though. It's just so much intake, though.
I have one of the videos where the government leader, he's all dressed in red, and there's a stadium full of blacks, and they're like jumping up and down and dancing, like, kill the bullet warrior, you know, kill the white people. You know, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Wow, is that anyway, one of them sent to me?
I think I might have, yeah. I still have it if you ever want to see it. I'll send it to you and you can air it one day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe air it on this next turn. I'll send it to you.
Okay, it may be here somewhere, though, but I don't know. Was it recent today or anything, or last couple of days?
I don't know what year it was. I have it, but...
So you haven't sent it?
I don't remember. I send you so much crap.
Yeah, and I got a folder that says Cork Serious and 20 Clips here, too, in the folder. I got a folder just for you.
You need a whole hard drive for me, man.
I got a total of about 10 terabytes here to use, so I got plenty of space.
Oh, here it is. I'm going to send it to you anyway. But anyway, what I was going to report this time was, let me pull up my notes here. I lost them a minute ago.
Well, that ain't good.
Here we go. Let's see. Okay, at the end of this month, something that's going to affect America in every way, shape, and form, I think the 27th of May, it's the pandemic agreement, what is and what isn't, and what could it mean for the United States. And the negotiation is going on between an international pandemic agreement, a pandemic accord, or pandemic treaty. For more than 2 years, representatives of members of the World Health Organization, once again, a Jewish globalist organization. A series of meetings. What's that?
Big farce and hoax. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. Anyway, they're having a World Health Assembly, and the Biden administration has supported the concept of the agreement and has engaged in negotiation process. I won't read this, but I'm going to tell you what's going on. If they had the pandemic treaty, and a pandemic is announced, or a disaster, mm-hmm. the World Health Organization can take over key departments of our government and basically suspend the Constitution. That would give them the power to force jab people against their will. But also, they declared that firearms is a health emergency, and that's the World Health Organization has done that. And they could, under their control, say everybody has to turn in the weapons, and those who don't, they could go door to door. And they know it's bloody, but they don't care. You know?
Yeah, they tried doing that. Governor Gretchen, somebody tried to do that, though.
In New York?
It's in New Mexico.
Okay.
Gretchen, somebody. It's been a while ago I talked about that. It didn't go too well. The Supreme Court has struck it down.
Well, anyway, this signing at the end of this month, could Biden could very well just give away America's sovereignty. That's it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would advise everybody to call their congressmen, senators, and voice your displeasure. But what do they? They don't care about us. They do what they want. They're all farting.
Hell yes, and we got to step up and do something before it's too late. What's that?
We have to step up. We have to stand up to these people.
Yeah.
We have to. It's a matter of life and death for us, our family, our friends,
mm-hmm.
everybody. That's why they shut down free speech. This is one of the remaining ones left. Anyway, moving on. There's this attorney. He's a black attorney. He's like a black supremacist. His name is Crump.
Crump.
And Crump, C-R-U-M-P.
Okay, it says Ben Crump here. I got right here on the block.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
He wants to decriminalize their culture. You got to fire that baby up.
Okay. Let's get it going here.
We can get rid of all the crime in America overnight, just like that. And people ask, how, Attorney Crump? Change the definition of crime. Mm. Of course, if you get to define what conduct is going to be made criminal, you can predict who the criminal is going to be.
It sounds like we're criminal, though.
Yeah.
Our existence
the culture.
Criminal.
But they made the law. They made the law to criminalize our culture.
To fit up.
Black culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so I think Eric Garner, I always think of stuff like that. Lucy Cigarette.
Wow. Absolutely.
So isn't he admitting that crime is their culture?
It sounds very likely to me.
You know, last week I talked about the prosecutors of color who said they're not going to prosecute criminal trespass, home invasion, or burglary, whether you're there or not. We're not going to prosecute terroristic threats or disorderly conduct or retail theft. They're saying this, you know, and they're not, according to their oath, they're not upholding our laws.
Nope.
And we have to get rid of them.
Well, we would discuss something, it's all with the Jewish agenda, though. Remember I played that clip, though? I think maybe you said to me the protocols of the learned elders. Part of that, yeah. It's exactly what it is.
Protocols of the elders of Zion.
Zion, yep.
Yep, and they deny it exists, naturally. They deny everything. And it's a set of principles that they implement to take over the world.
Yep.
Yep.
I was going to say, I played that clip to my mother, though, and she was shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said, that's something that my grandfather was saying all along. He was born in 1915, and he's been saying that all his life and all along, and he's absolutely right.
Right. You know, everybody on the LibertyNet is working hard to get the word out, to inform others about this power structure of the Jews and their intention of taking over, control everything, and taking away your freedom.
Yeah.
And a life without freedom is a life not worth living.
Well, you know what? You know where I stand on that, though. I'm going to uphold my oath, though, when I took it into service, though, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a bunch of them with me before they get me.
I don't doubt that a bit.
You know I will, buddy.
Yep, and anybody at nighttime, just look for the eyes and the eyes and teeth. You'll see it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, continuing on, the Secret Service officer that was working for Kamala Harris, she filed a lawsuit for $1 million claiming gender bias. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, she was assigned to protect Kamala Harris, right? She got into a brawl with one of the other Secret Service agents last week and filed a $1 million gender discrimination lawsuit in the city of Dallas while working as a police officer. And she was removed from her duties on Wednesday after displaying erratic behavior and assaulting a superior officer while awaiting Harris' departure from Joint Base Andrews in Maryland on Monday. Isn't that wonderful?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Good Lord.
Jeez.
In Charlotte, I have a little bit on that. The multiple law enforcement officers were shot, I believe four are dead.
That was a big thing in the news this past week, though, the shootings in Charlotte. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I saw some of the video. It was pretty intense. They were trying to execute a warrant, and the guy started shooting at him, and I heard there was another shooter, too. I don't know if they got him or not. But the guy who did it, the CMP SWAT team was at the scene. Medics came down. Four of them died. They were engaged by the subject previously known on Twitter. I'm trying to get his name. Anyway, he was shot dead, so he's gone.
Yeah.
He's Hickory. But you know what was funny? Was 2 days before that, the Congress voted on this gun agenda grab bill, where, and here's what they can do. Your neighbor, your roommate, somebody that knows you, can go in secret and report you as, a non-responsible gun owner in front of a judge and swear out a warrant or whatever, and you won't know about it. and you won't be a court to defend yourself, and they'll come take your guns, and you got to hire a lawyer to go back and get them back. And this is called shall not be infringed. This is being infringed.
Yeah.
And they passed that bill, and it's a bunch of garbage. And
okay, this would be in reference to Jim Jordan, I believe, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
That clip's on the block here. That's about almost 3 minutes, but I think it's worth playing.
I'm here for the duration.
Okay, let's run it, though. This is what Jim Jordan was saying.
Yep.
I think the chairman... The House Judiciary passes this bill today, we will have changed a fundamental and sacred principle in this country. In America, you are innocent until proven guilty, until today. If we pass this bill today, we are going to invert the standard and say you are guilty until proven innocent. And you will be guilty without doing anything wrong. Under this bill, you are guilty without doing anything wrong, simply because someone thinks you might do something wrong.
Back in the USSR.
Who's the someone under this bill who can petition a court to take away your Second Amendment liberties? Who's the someone defined under this bill? Page 13, Amendment of Nature Substitute. Chairman just introduced it. Top of page 13, it says, family or household member, go down to subsection D. Who's a household member? An individual who resides or who has resided with the respondent during the past year. A roommate who hung out with you for 1 month last year can go petition a court to take away your Second Amendment liberties. Some roommate maybe didn't like you. Some thought you were a slob. Whatever, can go petition the court to take away your fundamental rights without you doing anything wrong. And oh, guess what? Guess what? When they go in the court to take away your fundamental liberty, even though you haven't done anything, committed no crime, guess what? You don't even get to be there. You don't even get to defend yourself. That's exactly what this bill does. And Mr. Raskin has talked about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. I heard him on TV talk about it. I heard him twice now in this committee hearing today talk about it. And that's how we're going to take away someone's Second Amendment liberties? And this is the House Judiciary Committee, for goodness sake. What other constitutional right can you lose without doing anything wrong and without your knowledge and then have to go petition a court to get it back? Tell me what that is.
I'm happy to answer.
That happens. Tell me when that happens. This bill is so wrong on so many levels. It violates fundamental Second Amendment rights. It violates property rights. It violates due process rights. And yet today, the House Judiciary Committee, with the storied history this committee has in defending the Bill of Rights, is going to pass this legislation? I mean, this is scary. This is a scary road to start heading down. We all want to stop gun violence. We all know these terrible, evil things that happen are just that terrible and evil. But doing it, trying to do something that this bill seeks to do in this manner is so fundamentally wrong. And again, for the Judiciary Committee in the United States House of Representatives, who is charged more than any other committee in this body with defending the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, to pass this, it's just wrong.
Well said, Mr. Jordan.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah. I can't believe I what idiot proposed that? I wonder. Do you know?
I don't know the name.
Wow.
the other thing is they passed a bill, H.R. 6 something, and it was about anti-Semitism, and it's going to become a crime if you question the Holocaust or if you criticize a Jew, and maybe I'll save that one for another time, but it pissed me off royal.
You sent me that one, right?
I don't know, did I?
Well, let's see. The other ones I got here is Larry Elder, Crime Stats.
Yeah.
And... is a trick we always use. You said or something.
Anti-Semitism. Yeah, go ahead.
And that one doesn't have a time on it though. It must be.
Yeah, it's only real short.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Minute and almost a minute and a half. Okay, let's run her.
yours is a voice of criticism we don't often hear in the United States. Often when there is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government, people here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money, and the ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong, and they are strong in this country. As you know, they have power, which it's okay, they are talented people and they have power, money and media and other things. And their attitude is Israel, my country, right or wrong. They identify fiction. And they are not ready to hear criticism. And it's very easy to blame people who criticize certain acts of the Israeli government as anti-Semitic, and to bring up the Holocaust and the suffering of the Jewish people. And that justifies everything we do to the Palestinians.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey,
that's something else, too.
You know, here's what it is, okay? You know what Iron Dome is in Israel, right? It protects against missiles coming in or whatever.
Yeah.
Or anti-Semitism is just like Iron Dome, but linguistically. When somebody said something about the Jews, even if it's true, they fire a intercontinental ballistic missile of truth, and all of a sudden anti-Semitism missiles go up and intercept it so people don't find out what they're doing. That's what it is.
Yeah, it sounds exactly, you hit the nail on the head on that one. That's what it really sounds like to me.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to do just a couple more things before I leave.
Hey, don't worry about it. Go ahead.
Anyway, I want to tell you about this girl. That was like 10 years ago.
Okay, what now?
This girl about 10 years ago, right?
Okay.
And her name was Angel Adams, right? She was on the news. I just thought it was something I'd talk about. And she was a mother of 15 children from Tampa, Florida.
Oh, geez.
And
was she black?
Now she. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, the news goes to her house, and it's on camera. She comes out the door, and she goes, "Who's going to pay for all these kids? Somebody needs to be held responsible." And, you are responsible, lady, for all those kids, to all these different men. And she was acting like nobody was helping her, to find out that they were paying her rent and they were paying her utility bills and everything else. They spent the money she gave for food, and eventually she wound up in court. And the judge says, "No more kids. That's it, you know, and they're going to be taken off you." And she fought it for a while. But, you know, this went on and on and on. And the video is funny. It's not, well, it's not really funny. It's not, because it's irresponsible to have that many kids and you can't
take care of them. Yeah, okay, that's all. And we, the taxpayer, are paying for it, you know, and
that's
give
right.
her the food,
right.
Damn it.
You know, what happened was she had so many kids that her uterus took out an emergency protection from abuse and were against her.
Okay.
Yep. And then her uterus came up missing, and the police were searching for it because the uterus was reported missing for over a week. But they found her uterus. Yep. It was living overseas. It was living overseas with an assumed name and living in secret with her children.
Oh, jeez.
But the story is true, but the joke is about her taking the uterus, taking an emergency protection from abuse against her.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, oh, man. You know, we have enough gun control. What we need is idiot control, I think.
Yeah, what about idiot control? Anybody got a proposal on how to fix idiot control?
Well, the gun legislation will not work because the problem is unregistered guns, and blacks are killing blacks like crazy. And if you want to run that Larry Elder clip, I'll run that, and I'll say goodbye whenever it's over.
Okay, that's about a minute and a half. No problem. Yeah. So, okay, here's what Larry, how'd you pronounce
Elder.
Elder?
Yeah, he's a great guy. Great black man.
Okay, Larry Elder's crime stats. Let's roll it.
Just a few facts for Mr. James. Check this out. Fact. Of the 400,000 non-homicide violent black-white crimes, 85% are black perp, 15% the other way around. Fact. Blacks kill more blacks, nearly 7,000 last year, than the KKK did in its entire history. Fact. A young black man is 7 or more times more likely to be murdered than a young white man. And again, almost always by a young black man. Fact. Blacks kill 2 times as many whites, 500, as whites kill blacks, 250. Fact. Blacks, 13% of the population, commit 50% of the murders. Fact. Of the 50% of the homicides in this country that are committed by blacks, they are almost always committed by other blacks. Usually young black men. This means roughly 3% of the population is responsible for nearly half of the nation's homicides. Fact. The number one cause of preventable deaths in this country for young white men is accidents. You know, like car accidents. The number one cause of preventable deaths in this country for young black men? Homicide. Fact. Chicago. Murder capital of the country in terms of absolute numbers. The city is a third black, a third white, a third Hispanic. Blacks account for 70% of the homicides, and by the way, nearly 75% of them are unsolved.
Yeah, sounds like new crime boss is happening in Chicago.
Yep. Anyway, I'll let you go, and we've got to do another turn, so I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay, we'll play it by ear. We did pretty good on this round, I think. Everything went just fine without a hit. So, all right, very good. Big Daddy Cork, though. What is it, Beaver?
Yeah, we're from Beaver, Pennsylvania.
Beaver, Pennsylvania, okay.
Where sheep are nervous and teeth is an optional thing.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll see you on the next round. Okay, with that, though, that's enough on this turn, though. But, man, I think we had a... one heck of a good round there, though. I do say so myself. Anyway, back over to Net Control. KA2PTE with WB4AIO, Natalie and Hon. This is at 8RBI. Excuse me while I get it highlighted.
All right, Mike, very good. NERBI from KA2PTE near the end of the second round of our LibertyNet current events discussion. And, yeah, good hearing from Big Daddy Cork, our veteran Marine, and he definitely hits it out of the park every time he calls into your patch there with some incredible stuff. And I did see... an image on the QSO TV from Murad, OD5YK, and he seemed to be resonating with the stuff that Cork was relaying about Israel, and that, I guess that clip too, that was a very good clip about how they use the Holocaust as a trick every time a criticism comes up about Jews. It's usually the Holocaust or Hitler, or the fact that it seems like every single one of them that gets, criticized, they all have relatives that died in the Holocaust, in Auschwitz. They're all in Auschwitz, too. You know, it's just amazing how that is such a coincidence. But I don't know if Murad, OD5YK, I know he put up a image saying goodnight, he's leaving, but... I'll swing it over to you, Murad, if you're still there and you just want to say something really briefly. If not, I'll figure you're just listening out for the rest of the night. But OD5YK, if you'd like to say something, go ahead. All right, nothing heard from Murad, so I guess he is giving us the 7-3 and the good night. So, all right, we'll officially end the second round here. We'll look to get started and get into the third round. You're listening to the Liberty Net current events discussion on amateur radio and being live streamed on our website all over the world. And I guess what I'll do is I'll pause really quick here. Maybe there is another person on CQ100 that might want to check in and be with us on the third round. So I'll drag my feet again. Any station out there on the CQ100 platform?
If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight you fight, every game you play.